as a quick break, but I will just literally say, maybe I'll just go over and tell them I'll leave my vote for the revisers when I get back.
Well, don't worry about it. We'll accommodate it.
I just want to make sure you need, and knew that I needed to do. That's where I've been this morning.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Martin Luther King Day. We are going to get started with tourism. We have a busy schedule today, and we also don't have all of our members, but we do have a quorum. So we're going to start with Ms. Schober and try to move along as efficiently as we can. Just keep in mind that we need to be back on the floor right before 10 this morning. So thank you very much, and welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Diane Schober. I'm the Director of Tourism for the state of Wyoming. And here with me today are members of my staff, Alan Dubberly, who is our Deputy Director, Anita Benton, who is our business manager, and then we contract with the Wyoming Business Council for Comptroller Services, and Diane Joyce is with us today, too. Members of the Wyoming Tourism Board are also here with us, Chairman Clay Miller out of Buffalo, Vice Chairman Dave Hanks out of Rock Springs, Renee Middleton out of Cheyenne, Renee Penton-Jones out of Casper, Matt Driscoll from Devil's Tower, and Carrie Cooper from Jackson Hole.
Good morning, everyone.
And then one of our past chairmen is also with us, Mr. Gene Bryan, who is now trying to reside in Tucson, but we still know that he has very deep Wyoming roots. So thank you for the time before you today, and thank you for the consideration of our request. Just to give you a brief overview of the program of work of the Office of Tourism, our mission and focus is to drive out-of-state visitation to the state of Wyoming, and by creating a comprehensive marketing campaign that's compelling to leisure travelers, we can achieve that objective. It's all about having non-resident visitors come to Wyoming to enjoy a vacation, to spend their leisure dollars here in the state buying goods and services from Wyoming businesses, and driving an economy, an export economy for the state of Wyoming. In fact, in 2009, there were 7.1 million overnight visitors. Those visitors generated $2.5 billion in direct expenditures. 81% of that came from non-resident travelers. That's new money being pumped into Wyoming's economy, into the businesses and the cash registers of local businesses statewide. From that $2.5 billion, there was $107 million generated in local and state tax revenues. So for every dollar, public dollar to public dollar, the money that you spent to support our tourism advertising budget, our total budget in 2009, and those public funds that were returned back in tax revenue, it was an $8.16 return on investment for the public funds to public funds. The visitor industry also supports nearly 30,000 jobs with an earnings of over $700 million a year. So we have a really fun campaign that we get to do. It's all about the best that Wyoming has to offer. In the past, it's been all around Forever West, which embodies all the cultures and the freedoms and the aesthetics of Wyoming. We advertise in markets nationally, Chicago, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, markets predominantly in the Midwest. We utilize a variety of mediums, television, print, online, a variety of digital means. We use out-of-home, which has traditionally been billboards, but also city wallscapes and some other ambient marketing. And then regionally, we focus our regional advertising in the markets of predominantly Denver and Salt Lake, but we also Boise, Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Bozeman, Butte, Billings, Rapid City. So the national campaigns are geared in the earlier planning season. So they'll start late March and run to the end of May, traditionally. And then in the regional advertising will start late May and run as late as our budget will allow us to go through the month of August so that we're drawing more regional efforts. And the budget request that we have before you today really touches on how we want to leverage our markets and our ability to expand the Wyoming footprint, create greater awareness for the state of Wyoming as a vacation destination, and actually compelling advertising work that actually motivates a potential visitor to book that trip and actually come and visit Wyoming. We want to go into our the first request is for $1.2 million. It's to go in and deepen existing markets where we know there's already great awareness about Wyoming. and to further the awareness there. For example, a television campaign in a market like Chicago or Kansas City, Oklahoma City, Milwaukee, we might launch with, it'll go 2 weeks on, 1 week off, 1 week on, 1 week off. It actually are actual 6 weeks of television buy, but they're spread out over the course of 3 months. What we'd like to do in this instance is be able to go deeper with television, deeper frequency, so that we're over that course of those 3 months, the spots are actually running with greater frequency. We know that television is a really robust medium, and it's a great lead-in medium to create awareness. And when supplemented by a variety of other things, such as national magazine, online, which can be targeted for specific markets, or specific activities or lifestyles, and then out of home, which gives them a tangible, like a billboard or a wallscape or something that's creative, you're reinforcing that message. And then within our own existing budgets to support the request, we would continue on with other elements of our digital marketing, such as e-newsletters and social media through Facebook and Twitter and blogs and forums. And then the other thing that we want to do is also a kickoff for an ambient or a public relations effort. And I want to give you an example of what that means. This year, because we constantly monitor markets to see which markets perform well and how we want to open a market, does a certain market achieve a level of awareness? Can we pull back a little bit and to sustain that market and then reallocate those dollars over to a new market? So we're always looking at how the markets are performing and how well they're returning either inquiries and or visitors to Wyoming. And so this year, we've readjusted some of our markets, and we're going to actually go into Portland, Oregon this year with television and a big ambient campaign. We've been in Portland, Oregon with print and newspaper and online, and this year we'll go in and we'll start with television. And the ambient campaigns that we're looking at are actually, they have a very aggressive and comprehensive rail system in Portland. So we're going to buy rail cars. You'll buy one half of it, and then inside they're called Michelangelo's, and you buy the roof of the rail car, and then on there is what's called a QR code, and so travelers will actually take a picture of that with their cell phones or a smartphone of sort. They take that, they download it, they go to a Facebook page, and they can get a free pass to ride for a day, compliments of Wyoming Forever West. And so that's one example that we're going to do with rail cars. We're also going to do a big campaign. We're exploring the opportunity with a food truck. Food trucks are really popular in Portland. It's where, you know, you just go up and buy like either a burger, a bison burger, or something that would be reflective of Wyoming, showcasing the beef or the our sheep industries. But we'll buy a food truck. We'll go to an event in Portland and actually have some of our cowboys from our cowboy marketing program there doing roping demonstrations. And it'll be just for a day. And we can be able, the idea of that is to leverage public relations and get media there and to create a buzz about it. So that's what we're talking about when we say ambient. It's something that's different than traditional media. We're also utilizing interactive walls in Portland. There's so many interesting things that you can do today. An example is a wall that would be on the side of, if you were at a retail store, you know, they have those big display windows. So you take over something like that, and a consumer, anyone, a pedestrian walking by comes, and they see Old Faithful, and they raise their hands up, and the geyser erupts. And they raise their hands down, and the geyser goes down. So those are the kind of things that you can do on a wall where you could play. Another example is to take Devil's Tower at night, where someone could actually grab the stars and then throw them out or scoop the stars in. You could play in water at a river. So these interactive walls are really engaging ways to have people, you know, kind of get introduced into the product and get excited about what they might want to do when they come to Wyoming. So when we talk about ambient marketing in these budget requests, those are examples of what we're talking about. It's something that you would do to really launch a big campaign. And so that's what we're doing in Portland. And part of this $1.2 million that we're asking for in the markets of Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, and Oklahoma City, as well as we would use Milwaukee and Minneapolis too, is to deepen the television schedule by 2 to 3 weeks, to do a public relations or an ambient event within those markets to try to really kick off when we go in with our big advertising effort, And then to utilize a software that we already have, which is called Vocus, which tracks all of the media and the social media mentions that we get, to really find out where our best influential bloggers and tweeters are so that we can go out and start to engage conversations with them to really lift that ambient marketing. So that's our first request of the $1.2 million. The second request that we have before you is for $675,000, is to increase the overall repeat visitation from regional markets and to increase multiple trips from adjacent markets. When we look at our marketing efforts, we monitor how many people are coming to Wyoming for first-time visitation and how many people are coming back for repeat visitation. Further out markets are usually a first-time visitation. Closer in markets are higher in repeat visitation, and I think that just stands to reason. The closer in markets that are predominantly the best feeder markets for us is because of the size of the population are Denver and Salt Lake City. And so we really know that there's a lot of opportunity to go deeper into those markets. Overall branding and awareness isn't really appropriate in a market that's so close to Wyoming where they already understand that Yellowstone National Park is here, Devil's Tower National Monument is here, even Glendale State Park and many of our state parks. There's a lot of awareness in those markets about the Wyoming product. So what we want to do with the largest portion of this request is go in and do research and to go in and actually look at these consumers and go deeper into what are their thoughts, perceptions, ideals about Wyoming, and what are the things that they need to know in an advertising campaign or marketing effort that would inspire them to actually book a trip into Wyoming. And there are a variety of research tools that are already existing out there that we can buy into. We wouldn't have to recreate the wheel. We have a database already of many existing consumers from those markets, and then we actually would go in and do some focus work in there. Once we get those analysis back, then we would custom create creative to meet the research results. Whatever that research would tell us, then we would define the creative. And many times what we've already determined in some of that creative is events or tell us what to do, not necessarily where to go, but what could we do on a weekend or a weekday visit to Wyoming. And so those are some things that we want to build on and be smarter about how we're building those campaigns and how we can actually leverage those markets. And then we want to fully engage all of our social media channels. Social media is something that we really aggressively started about a year ago. We did a social media audit last spring and to give us a deeper understanding about what each of these communication tools could mean and how you can leverage them for buzz and awareness about your product. So we want to further deepen those with partners in the regional markets. And then certainly to continue to evolve our road trip campaign. And I don't know how many of you may have seen it last year, but we ran two ads on our road trip campaign. One was shot in southern Campbell County at the Durham Buffalo Ranch, and it started out with just this thundering herd of bison or buffalo. It looked like, you know, you were out anywhere, and it was, when was the last time you heard a thundering herd of bison? How about last Tuesday, road trip Wyoming? So it was taking something that you wouldn't have, maybe you wouldn't think you would hear on an everyday, but you could hear it here in Wyoming. And then another one was shot in Fremont County near Pavilion with Powder River Rodeo Productions, and just their herd of horses that they use, their saddle bronc and bareback horses, and they rounded those up and ran those kind of through the countryside, beautiful country up there. And, you know, when was the last time you heard cowboys hoop and holler and the thundering sound of horse hooves? And there's a little boy standing there with a cowboy hat on, and he's got this grin from ear to ear. And so that is part of the lead-in of the road trip campaign. And then it would have, like, different events that would happen over the weekend. Well, we need to evolve that to be able to go into more markets, include more events. So that is the other component of the $675,000. It really is about, in those markets, it provides a great opportunity to engage visitors with places around Wyoming that are off the beaten path, that are not as traditionally known as our national parks, but even some of our state historic sites, our state parks, events, festivals, you know, the Casey Barbecue Festival in Warland, or there's just so many great things around the state that happen throughout the summer. The third objective, excuse me, is a request for $3 million to actually open up and test two new major markets. The two markets that we know are the best for the greatest return on this investment at this time are Seattle-Tacoma area and Dallas-Fort Worth. And we know that because there's a science behind marketing. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, the sort of the gut of what you know. But we also engage in a lot of research and science so that we can look at markets. And we know that when we're investing in these markets, that there is a great potential for return on visitation. And the Seattle, Tacoma, and Dallas-Fort Worth areas have been percolating up to the top for many years. We're in those markets now with a presence through national print, which is magazine, national magazine, through online efforts, through newspaper efforts, through public relations, through social media, through all of those other existing efforts where we are currently. What we want to do is go into those markets with the big, bold campaign of television, supported by out-of-home and ambient. And what we're proposing is we would open those markets in the spring of 2012. And then we would be able to monitor and see what kind of lift we actually were able to get from those markets with this kind of an investment. They may prove to show greater return on investment than some of the other markets, like in Oklahoma City or Kansas City, or collectively some of those markets combined. Huge major markets, just by the sheer size of their population, obviously are naturally going to give you some lift. But what we really want to do is look at the lift on inquiries, the lift on awareness, and then ultimately the lift on conversion. Did they actually book a trip and travel to Wyoming? And we have research tools already in place to monitor that. So we wouldn't need additional research to look at the return on this. What we need is the marketing dollars to go in and really push those markets to move the meter on tourism. We would go in for 8 weeks of television. So we'd have kind of, it would mirror a campaign. When we opened up Chicago, this is what we did. We went with a big, strong, bold television campaign and then supported by out of home, which is what we're doing in Portland this year. Portland's going to be part of our ongoing efforts. It's part of our existing budget. And then Seattle and Tacoma in 2012, we'd go in big, bold, medium like television, support by out of home, launch it with a lot of fun stuff with ambient to get some buzz and some media awareness, and not just traditional media from, like, you know, your local news, but maybe in Portland, we're hoping that technical magazines would even look at us with some of the interactive things that we want to do on the interactive wall. So we'd be looking at the same thing in a Seattle market, is how could you start to look into that technology that's there. In Dallas, I think the tie-in for just the big wide open spaces, even though they have that in Texas, it still is a market that's very, very inclined to travel to Wyoming. And then public relations, doing a big PR blitz in those two markets to, again, provide lift to the $3 million that we'd be investing in paid media advertising. The fourth element that we're asking you to consider is for $125,000 to do a social media Facebook effort in the United Kingdom. And the reason why we chose the United Kingdom is because it's an English-speaking country, it's a mature market for the United States, and it's also, behind Canada, the largest inbound market for Wyoming. And what we're looking at doing here is a tie-in with a social media effort that would also go back and drive people to not only directly to the consumer site, but also to travel agents. In Europe, travel agents are still used heavily. The United Kingdom is probably one of the markets that's starting to shift to go consumers buying directly. But because the way the government protects visitors when they go out and they buy out-of-country trips, residents inside those countries still use travel agents a great deal. It's much more predominant than what we were probably 30 years ago. They're still using it very heavily. So what this would do is you start with a social media campaign, you'd run some kind of contest, and then you'd drive people back to the travel agents so that they could then book their trips. We have representation in the United Kingdom. So we have a company it's called Target. It's run by a man named Martin Short, who's not Martin Short, the comedian, but he is rather humorous. He's got a nice, dry British sense of humor. So they're already working with media and with travel agents in the United Kingdom, so there's an awareness of the product. This would give lift to the product. We've also met with the Travel Channel UK, and they have a program that could provide greater awareness in the marketplace. So you'd be using television in a way with the Travel Channel in the United Kingdom, driving them to the Facebook page, to the contest, and then also driving people into the travel agents. There was a somewhat similar program that the state of Oregon did in Germany and had great success with it. And so what we're doing is, again, not reinventing the wheel, but modeling something that we saw that had a proven return for where we know there's great lift for Wyoming awareness and a desire to visit the state of Wyoming. So that's $125,000. Again, that would be used in 2012. And we start with actually in the fall of 2011, provided your approval of this, to kick off for visitation in 2012. And then the last request that we have before you today is for $114,895. And this is to actually provide a facelift to our digital platforms. The first element of this is a redesign of the homepage of WyomingTourism.org, which is the consumer site. We're spending literally $5.5 million a year in paid advertising to drive people to go to this website. So this is really the front door and front entree into Wyoming's tourism product. Within that website, all Wyoming tourism-related businesses and attractions have free listings. They cannot afford to spend $5.5 million, most of them, on their own, and so they rely on they might be spending some dollars, but they're relying on the greater marketing muscle from the Office of Tourism. So when what we want to do is this, we just launched this site in 2009, in February of 2009, and so it's been up for almost 2 years. If this money were given to us, it would take us probably about a year. It'd be 2012 before we'd launch the new site. But it's just, you know, it's always critical to keep things fresh. Technology moves so rapidly today in the way in which people engage with their information and how you need to have current information available always and transition in and out. We'd like the money to do that. And then also, we'd like to be able to add three fundamental search elements to our site. There is a search element on our site. You can search by city. You can search by attraction or whatever you want to do. You can search by date on a calendar of events. You could search by a business name. But what we want to do is make our search functionality much more aligned with what a consumer is used to when they go into a Google search or a Bing search. And the first thing would be the best matching feature. So if you go in and you type in something in a Google or a Bing, they might say, here are other things that you might also look at. I know on Bing they have all the on the list on the left. They give you all kinds of here are the best match searches. If you type in something and you spell it incorrectly, this is what you asked for. This is what we think you really want. And so we want to be able to give that back to the consumer. And then the suggested feature where you I'd have some suggested keywords, and then it brings back all these other things that would fit those keywords. And then the enhanced sort and filter, which you could sort by relevance, popularity, alphabetically, reverse alpha. You could enter a location or a zip code. And so it's just enhancing what we already have there. So the total request that we have before you today is $5,114,895,000. These are one-time funds that we're requesting. Again, they are to deepen existing national markets where we know there is a great return on our investment. It is to go into regional markets and enhance some research and then adjust creative accordingly to be able to best leverage those short markets for Wyoming. To expand and open up two major national markets, Seattle-Tacoma and Dallas-Fort Worth, to do an online and social media with Travel Channel UK in the United Kingdom, and then to enhance the front door of our digital platform, Wyoming Tourism Front Door. And I just, you know, it's important, I think, to remember the benefits of tourism. As I mentioned before, tourism is an export economy. What's nice about the growth of this particular industry is you don't have to invest a lot of infrastructure into social services or schools or healthcare to grow an industry like tourism. People come here, they spend their dollars, and they leave. It's also an industry that when you grow it, it benefits the quality of life of the citizens of Wyoming, because the residents and the visitors enjoy doing the same things, you know, the great outdoors or the wonderful Western culture and heritage that we have, or visiting state parks or a national monument. So there are many things that are synonymous there with quality of life and tourism development. It also is a great industry for growing business. It's a business that's about an entrepreneur or mom and pop It's not predominantly for corporate. I mean, there are many corporate businesses in our tourism industry here, but there are many single individual businesses. And it really is about the best of Wyoming and what we have to offer. And it's about engaging our people. Because every visitor, whether you're on a trail ride at a dude ranch or you're visiting the Buffalo Bill Historical Center or you're asking an usher at Cheyenne Frontier Days to help you find your seat, it's about engagement with our people. And I know that you all recognize that one of the greatest assets that Wyoming has is the people that live here. And it's one of the truest enjoyments of my job are traveling around the state and meeting the people who work in this industry and who make their living from this industry. And I really do think that they're great ambassadors for the state of Wyoming. And then tourism growth also is a great sales tax generator. And these are outside dollars coming into Wyoming. And when people buy goods and services, they're also then, the tax revenues off of that are going to local governments and coming back to the state of Wyoming. And so it's a way to grow sales tax for governments. And then the traveling public. You know, once they come here and they have a great experience and we deliver on the promise of a great vacation, then the word of mouth and the exponential benefits that we get from that continue to be a great driver for Wyoming's tourism economy. And with that, Madam Chairman, I would answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Schober, and I'll open it up to the committee for questions. Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for my five-minute tardiness, so there's a very good chance maybe you covered it in the first 5 minutes. But I would like to ask the director, is there – I've seen a correlation between tourism and the relocation of businesses three different times in the last 5 years. Do you guys do any kind of study about that, about people who come out here for something that they've heard about through one of our advertising and then end up deciding to stay?
Director Schober?
Madam Chairman and Representative Pedersen, we don't have an official study on it, but we do know through many anecdotal conversations and people that we've been highlighted or through the Wyoming Business Council who've been highlighted that they've been aware of Wyoming because of a vacation. And it clearly is. I mean, we talk about tourism as being the front door to non-tourism economic development. And I think that goes to exactly what you just said is they come here, they see, you know, the beautiful landscapes, the culture, the kind of people, and then also the friendly business environment that's available to individuals. So I think it is, there's definitely a tie. And with the bigger marketing power of tourism, we can continue to bring people to the state and make them aware of what we have.
Thank you. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious. You know, this is my year to plead ignorance of being a freshman on committee, so
1 year.
1 year, I know. So I'm getting all my stupid questions out early. Page 10, it's called When TV Flights Are Running. What do you mean by TV flights?
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman, Senator Von Flatern. That's actually when we go in, it's the time when the television advertising is being placed. And we don't have the budget to run television year-round. And so let's just take Chicago, for example. We'll start, our television is scheduled to start the last week of March in that market. We'll kick off with 2 weeks, and then we'll have a week off, we'll have a week on, a week off, and we spread it out over the course of from the end of March to the first part of June. That's called the TV flight. But actually, there are only 6 weeks when the television spots are actually running, but we spread it out over, you know, a 12-week period. That's why other elements of the advertising campaign are so important to provide a tangible, to leave that awareness of Wyoming there so that you're thinking about it. Oh, I saw it on television. Oh, now I see it on a wallscape, or I see it on a rail car. So that television flight is that's the big muscle behind the marketing, and then all the other things are reinforcing it as well.
Thank you. Page 12, where you talk right above the total of $3 million on that page, you talk about partnering with these other companies. Are those available, or is this something you're hoping to do, or the opportunity there?
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman and Senator Von Flatern, there is nothing that is confirmed yet with those partners. The example that I can give you that's concrete is in the market of Portland. We actually looked at one of our ambient campaigns as being a scavenger hunt with an online, it's called Foursquare. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. It's an application on a smartphone where people check into businesses, and then you the more you check in, you kind of get this badge of honor or whatever kind of prize they want to offer to you. Sometimes it's just that. It's just like a badge of honor. And so we looked at using that with a variety of partners like an REI. The one thing that's interesting about it, in a city like Portland, if you used REI as a partner, you don't have to go into an REI store to actually check in on Foursquare. You can be within a block of an REI store in Portland to actually check in. And so we're sort of looking at what the elements of those partnerships would be. But there's plenty of opportunity. We've already started conversations. We've been in conversations here with Taco John's International about ways in which we maybe could partner with them with a Wyoming message, and still trying to work out mutual objectives for both companies. So,
go ahead, follow up.
Thank you on that answer. Page 13 and 14, the $125,000 that you're requesting, is there an urgency now? I mean, is there a reason that it's in a supplemental versus being in your regular budget?
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman and Senator Von Flatern, the reason why it's in our supplemental is because it is a substantial amount of money for one particular market. In terms of what we have in our overall international efforts, we have in our travel trade program, it's probably for all markets and for staff and all of the other support work, the shipping, the freight, and everything, is right around $700,000. And so that we have five markets in the United Kingdom where we already are, in Europe. United Kingdom is one, Germany, France, Italy, and the Benelux countries. We also have efforts in Japan and in Australia and in Scandinavia. And so that total budget is spread across all markets. What we want to do here is go specifically into one market in Europe and do it. We'd certainly take it as an ongoing appropriation. I mean, if it, you know, and quite honestly, to be very honest with you, what we'll do is the thought behind this is to test it and see how well it works. And if it is a successful endeavor, then that would lead to either the decision to shift dollars or come back and ask for the ongoing appropriation in the future. But that the idea was that we would do it as a test.
Follow up.
Thank you. I think the governor's recommendation says something about not being biannualized.
Yeah,
that might be a hint, but. So on the next page, so let me, if I can follow back on that question, on your explanation, is there particularly a reason to do it now, the extra $125,000 right now, instead of waiting 12 months?
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman and Senator Von Flatern, this will happen in next year. So the reason why we wouldn't start it right now is because we wouldn't have the appropriation. If you approved it, we would have it July 1st. There are a couple of things that are happening that the reason why we want to push on the markets nationally. And some of you may or may not be aware, but the United States passed the Travel Promotion Act in March of 2010. President Obama signed this into law. It's the first time that the United States will actually have a funding mechanism to do a national tourism campaign. Those monies were collected starting on September 8th through the Department of Homeland Security. It's a $10 fee on all non-visa waiver entries into the United States. And so the collection is estimated to be well over $100 million a year. And so the Corporation for Travel Promotion actually will start to leverage those funds. There's a board set up. They're hiring a staff. They'll lay out a marketing campaign. And states, destinations, businesses will be able to leverage those dollars in co-op opportunities. And so what we wanted to do was have a program that was set up that we could tie in where the United States is going to go and deepen efforts. Because we know that the United Kingdom will most likely, I mean, it would be 99.9% certain that they would be in the United Kingdom because it's such a good market for the U.S., that we want to be able to take advantage of the lift that's going to happen from the United States. And it would be much more expensive to do anything where we had to translate everything. We'd have to have a translator on staff for every social media response. You know, this way, if it's all English, we save ourselves a lot of dollars in that respect.
Can I follow up on that, please? Well, not on that particular, but this pretty much this whole $5 million, whatever your final total is contract services. I see there's no requests for employees in here, so you're good on with what you have as far as monitoring and whatever your involvement would be?
Madam Chairman and Senator Von Flatern, that's true. There is no request for any additional staff. These are contract services. within and again, you know, I do recognize that these are all one time. We specifically designed the use of these dollars for one time funds to be able to leverage those to the best of our ability, and everything else to support with what we have in house.
Ms. Schober, maybe what would be good is to give a brief overview of how you collect the data to make certain that you're successful in the promotions that you engage in for our new members.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, we're on contract with a company called Strategic Marketing and Research Incorporated. They're based out of Indianapolis, and they're independent from our ad agency. They do advertising awareness studies for the state of Wyoming. They also do them for many other states. And so they'll go into markets where we're running our advertising, and they go in and they do it in two waves. They go in the spring, and they come back in the fall. And in the spring, what they do is they'll, through a series of online panels, they'll start to ask consumers questions about, did you see this television spot? Did you see this print ad? Did you see this online ad? And then they'll start to gauge awareness in each one of the markets. How well did people recall seeing it? You know, what were their impressions of it? What were their thoughts of it? Did it inspire them to actually go and look for information on the state of Wyoming? And then in the second wave, starting about late October, the first part of November, they'll go back in and they do follow-up. Do you recall seeing these ads? So they ask them again, like, how, you know, great was the recall from when they're actually running in the marketplace until later in the fall? And then did you actually book a trip? And what they also do is they measure out if you already had awareness about Wyoming and were you already planning a trip and this just motivated you to do it, or did you not have any awareness of Wyoming and you saw this advertising and then you actually booked a trip? We call that incremental trips. So trips that actually were in the purest sense of all results of the advertising efforts. And so when you're looking at, first of all, the first thing we measure is awareness. And how well are your ads, are they resonating with consumers? And an average nationally is about 50%. So if you have a 50% recall, you're doing fairly well in a market. And we have our ads are averaging about 68%. And it varies, you know, some more than others. The one that we kicked off with the first reflections was shot up in Sheridan and then at Devil's Tower. It's a little boy talking about he remembers, you know, the spirit of the West and that Associated Print ad. They resonate off the charts. But it's been in the market the longest as well. But a 68% advertising recall is really, really good. And then we measure the incremental travel, and we look at how well markets perform, how well they're competitive. The other thing that we do so that we understand markets, how well they perform, it's a marketing term. It's called the Brand Development Index. But what it is, it's a national leverage that you look at for what they call direct market areas or DMAs. So you take a market and you go in and you measure awareness against population in a DMA. So you could have Denver would be a DMA, Chicago's a DMA, but it's not just the city itself, it's the surrounding area. And you look at how well that resonates. So if you had 100 inquiries from Des Moines, Iowa, or 100 inquiries from Chicago, you're going to have a deeper awareness in Des Moines because of the population. So you're looking at it as a ratio of population. So that gives you a measure. And you look at how that goes up and down and how well you're going into these markets. And what you want is for the BDI number to increase. You want your awareness level as a relationship to population to be on the increase, that you're making more people within those markets aware. And so that's what we're always looking at, are what are those levels. You reach a level of the 600s, you're doing really well. You start to get into the 800s, that tells you then that you can maybe shift some dollars out of that market because you're at a really super high level, and you could allocate those dollars over to another one. So there is a very strong science behind it. And then we also monitor everything else. Who comes in and orders information off of our website? We still have a strong fulfillment program. People say direct mail is dead. It is not. And so we monitor those. We also, today, technology allows you to go in and look at everyone who visits your website. So we do BDIs, or that Brand Development Index, on people who come in and order mail or who just visit the website. The good news is that both the online and the mail order information lines up for markets. But we're constantly doing this. So, there is a strong science behind it. And the strategy that lays out and defines the markets is not about what we just think is good. It's also about the consumers telling us what works well.
We got a house load of folks with questions. We're going to start with Representative Pedersen, then Esquivel, then Edmonds, and then we'll go to Senator Meyer. Brian?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for the director is, maybe perhaps this would be a better question to wait for Director Cathcart to be here, but I was wondering about our new building.
Right. Let's do the southern building and the eastern building at the very end here today.
Sounds
just
good.
For a recap for our new members, and then we'll certainly have Mr. Cathcart speak about it also.
Thank you, Madam
Okay.
Chair.
Okay. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and it's more of a follow-up on your question, is when you're measuring the success of tourism in the state of Wyoming, and I don't know how often I've heard on the floor the debate mentions that tourism is Wyoming's number two revenue source, that when you start looking at a certain data to measure that, what are all those factors that you take into account?
Director Schober?
Madam Chairman and Representative Esquivel, we actually have an economist that does the economic impact analysis for the tourism industry. It's a company named Dean Runyon & Associates out of Portland, Oregon. They, too, are recognized as being economists for measuring a variety of industries. Tourism happens to be one of their strong suits. But they work closely with the Department of Employment, the Department of Wyoming's Department of Employment, Wyoming's Department of Revenue and Taxation, to gather data to look at the quantifiable impact of the visitor industry. They also use a lot of national benchmarks so that they can compare it and look at where we are in terms of volume and what kind of feedback we get. There are a variety of industry codes that are identified through that analysis through the Department of Revenue. Obviously, accommodations is a big one. And then there are certain retail sectors. There are attractions. There's a whole hospitality and leisure sector that are identified through revenue and taxation as being components of this industry. They also do a gross state product analysis for us. And so they compare that to we actually aren't buying that every year just because it doesn't change really from year to year, so it didn't seem relevant to spend the dollars to buy the analysis every year. But it'll show you the tax revenues from the industries, the profits from the industries. Certainly minerals, big minerals by far exceed any other industry in Wyoming. We all know that. I'm a resident of Campbell County. I'm a beneficiary of that. But it is so we know where those come from. And then the taxation and contribution on the industries, once you combine all the big industry, the next greatest contributor of tax revenues to the state of Wyoming is the tourism industry.
And, Madam Chairman, one quick follow-up on that. Do you look at how many people buy out-of-state hunting and fishing licenses? A lot of those people, I guess they'll camp out in our state parks, and some of them when they're hunting, they're actually not even in a state park. They're just up in the mountains in some of those areas where hunting's more prevalent. So do you look at out-of-staters are coming here to hunt and fish?
Director Schober?
Madam Chairman and Representative Esquivel, yes, we do. For those out-of-state snowmobile permits, I mean, we work closely with state parks and cultural resources and Wyoming Game and Fish, so we can look at where the source of our visitors are coming from. Too much to go into today, but at some point we'll share with you the conclusions of the master plan that was just completed, which was a combined effort from the three agencies, tourism, game and fish, and state parks and cultural resources.
Thank you, Director Schober. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, good. Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Director Schober, probably the only thing that I have real issues with is the $3 million. And you said it, and I'm glad you said it. There are challenges with sustaining new market development when only supported by a one-time appropriation. And obviously, I think it'd be more than challenges. I think it'd be honest for all of us to say that we're not going to spend $3 million to go into these new markets and then abandon them at the next budget session. I mean, it would be, well, I'd love your opinion about that. I mean, if we go in, we spend the $3 million, it's going to come back around if we do well. So for a supplemental budget request, this is where I'm having issues with that.
Director Schober?
Madam Chairman and Representative Edmonds, it is. I think it's something that we look at as if we were going to do this, what are the risks that are involved and what are the benefits that are involved with it? And so we're looking at that, that ratio of where we could be. We believe that the benefits of going in and investing in these markets with a one-time appropriation, will give us many things. A, they're already ripe for opportunity. So it's not like we're going in and starting all over with a market where there isn't awareness and there isn't the opportunity to really move those visitors to book vacations to Wyoming. So these markets, we've been looking at them. There's already advertising efforts there through online, through print, through newspaper, through a specific newspaper insert on travel. So there's efforts there. What we want to do is really move the meter on those with television and with out of home. And what we would what would happen at the end of this is we'd look at that and analyze how well did those markets perform through some of the analytics and research that I've explained to you this morning. And then a couple of things would come as an outcome of that. We would say that market didn't perform the way that we thought it would, so we're not going to go in with a robust campaign like this in the future. Or two, that market performed really well, and two things would happen. We would come back and ask for an ongoing appropriation to be able to fund that market, or we would have to make a really tough decision to forego another market and shift funds over to sustain that market. But until we can go in and really push it and test it, we won't know. And we did a few years ago, the Wyoming legislature allowed us to have the same opportunity in Chicago. There was an appropriation of $2 million to look at Chicago for a two-year period. Just on television, we scraped together other dollars to supplement it with other means of advertising. But the Chicago market performed so well. In fact, it's our best performing market today that it's become, we came back and asked for an ongoing appropriation, and we've appropriated funds there. So, you know, there will be a choice of things that will happen once we see how well these markets perform. Mm-hmm.
Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard. Good morning, Richard Cox.
Good morning. Before we go any further, we need to get this one time clarified. The governor's recommendation on this $3 million is that the amount will not be biannualized. That means the $3 million will be in the standard budget for 13-14. It just won't be doubled. So this $3 million will go unless the committee and Diane has changed her mind here, would be in the standard but not doubled. The digital enhancement money, the $114,895, will be one time and not part of the standard budget for 13-14. But maybe that helps.
Yes.
But thank you.
While we're on it, further question, Representative Edmonds.
And this may just be a technical question for my own, but we put it in the 901, so just all of it. We put all of it. So
yeah, 901 would be biannualized. When we work the budget, we'll put the 114,000 in 903, which is one time.
Madam Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
In the conversations when we started working on this budget request, we started the conversations, obviously, with Governor Friedenthal, and just so that you know where our thoughts were, is he was interested in working with us to support it as a one-time appropriation. It was our understanding at that time, and it's been the same conversation that we've had with Governor Meade. And so if I just want you to know that's our understanding of this. We certainly would welcome anything beyond that, but I don't want you to think that we were under the impression that it was going to be anything but that.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Director Chicago, we went over old markets, and I'm sure we got plenty of data on that. I was wondering if we could just do whether you've already done a simple thing, the dollar spent, Chicago, figured out the number of tourists that actually came from Chicago, and then just a financial analysis of the dollars per tourist and the tax revenues there. I would think that we've probably, if we've never done that, I'm sure that we probably have enough data to do that.
Director Schoberg.
Madam Chairman and Senator Meyer, I'm thinking about your question. We have. I don't believe that our incremental analysis breaks down by market. I'd have to ask our researcher how that could be done, but I definitely will look into it and see what kind of information we could get back on that.
One other question.
Follow-up.
I guess recently I'm just wondering if you've ever done any direct mail with timeshare companies or anything like that. I know that I bought one of these things at a fundraising auction, and I definitely had to use it in a certain part of time, and I definitely had to travel. So these are people that are going to travel. They really don't have a choice, or they're going to lose the benefit of the timeshare. I wonder if you've ever done any direct marketing or mail campaigns to those type of companies.
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman and Senator Meyer, we have not done direct marketing campaigns for fractional ownership or timeshare. We have utilized direct mail on a variety of occasions, and it's been part of our ongoing summer campaign for the last few years. But it's been to all folks within our database, not just to a specific segment of the traveler.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There was numerous of my questions that were answered already, which is great, and I won't repeat them. But just on kind of dovetailing on the marketing, how do you choose? And if you had mentioned that, I didn't pick it up. But how do you choose the new markets you're getting into? Is my first part of that. It was the final part of my collective questions, but.
Madam Chairman and Senator Hastert, it's done through measuring return and awareness in a market, and we actually go for low-hanging fruits. So when there's already a great awareness about Wyoming, to go in with an advertising effort, you can lift on that awareness. And so it's measured through what we call the Brand Development Index, and it's something that's done through our advertising agency.
Okay. Madam Chairman, on another direction here, did you – when we talk about the 114 – you had indicated, and maybe I just need you to elaborate a little more on it, that we're spending $5.5 million a year on the website or the computer. And I didn't understand that completely. And that's why I was trying to have a hard time understanding. We want $114,000. We already have $5.5 million, but maybe elaborate on that point a little bit for me.
Director Schober.
Madam Chairman and Senator Hastert. Our online staff wish that we were spending $5.5 million on our website, but we're not. $5.5 million is paid media advertising. And we spend about $130,000 a year on development and maintenance of our website. We did get a one-time appropriation 3 or 4 years ago from you to go in and completely overhaul our website. We did a whole back-end for the data and how the data is managed and how the data feeds up. But now we just have ongoing updates. And so this would be a refresh to the face, not to the back end, but to the face. And then, obviously, for the search functionality, that's a little bit back end and a little bit of front end as well.
Good. Any other questions, committee? Then we'll go into the capital construction side for just a few minutes. So since we have several new members on our committee, it would be good just to give us an update on how effective your eastern entrance new project is and how you are doing on the southern entrance with the project.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. About 7 years ago, we actually requested funds to build a welcome center at the I-90 gateway coming into Wyoming. There had been money set aside in the Herschler administration, and then the state had a budget deficit, and so those funds were pulled back out to build a welcome center there, and so we didn't have a welcome center. Senator Hines and Representative Wallace's father actually tried to get funds set aside about 10 years ago, to get money for a welcome center on the northeast corner of Wyoming. Again, it didn't work because of the financial situation, but fortunately, we were able to get a capital construction, $10 million, capital construction approval, and through a process and land acquisition and bids, and I'm happy to report to you that on July of 2010, we opened the Northeast Wyoming Welcome Center. Many of you were there at that. It was a really fun, beautiful summer day. This is a center that's on the inbound lane of I-90. It's about 5 miles from the Wyoming-South Dakota border. It's very close to Beulah, very close to the Vore Buffalo Jump, right at the intersection for Highway 111 if you were going to go up to Aladdin. It's on the right side, so when visitors come in, you know, the rule is highly visible, easily accessible, and so it meets both of those standards. We had a little temporary building at the rest area in Sundance that we've been operating out of for the last many, many years. And we were averaging about 200 visitors a day at that little temporary facility at the rest area. In July, we were averaging 700 visitors a day at our new Welcome Center. And that sustained fairly well through the through the summer season. We had community days there. Crook County, Campbell County, Weston County all did community days at the center. The high school came out and sold water to the during the rally. I mean, it was just, you know, it's been a great facility. We've had a lot of school children stop over and do field trips there because the interpretation is phenomenal. And so if you haven't been up there and you're on I-90, it's definitely a stop worth making. And so we're really pleased with what that has offered to the state of Wyoming. We just recently concluded a visitor information center study, and I'll have the results for you sometime during the session. Just got the executive summary on Friday. But it really is important that for you all to know that these do influence consumers' behaviors when they're in the state. They'll visit more places. They ultimately spend more money. They get off the beaten path. And so they're a great success. On the Southeast Wyoming Center, all of the money for the capital construction to date has been appropriated. You appropriated the final funds last year during the session. There have been about $15 million that have been appropriated for this particular project. I'm pleased to report to you that we're moving along right along within the time frame. We're working, obviously, it's being managed through construction management, through A&I, and we'll be ready to probably go out to bid shortly. And they're scheduled to open bids at the end of February or the 1st of March of this year, so just a little over a month. We'll be doing a groundbreaking anticipated sometime in late April or early May. All of you will be invited to attend that, and with an opening scheduled in late 2012. We will be back next year in the regular budget cycle to ask for, there was about $500,000 that you chose not to fund last year, and that would include some furnishings and some other things that weren't critical to the construction, but they will be critical to the opening. And so, because we're not opening until this next biennium and won't even really start construction until then, we don't need that money, but that will be back in part of the appropriations budget request next year. And then it will be up to the State Building Commission, the governor, the State Building Commission, and then the legislature, too, as to what happens with the building where we are here in Cheyenne. That's currently owned by the Department of Transportation. It's state property. It's owned by the state. There's about 40 acres that's there. It's prime real estate. It's right at the exit of I-25 and College Drive. Unfortunately, it doesn't serve as a welcome center location well because it's on the outbound lane, and you know, it's hidden if we're any inbound traffic. You have to come in and then turn left into heavy truck and trailer traffic, and then you have to go behind the hill, and you know, it's like a scavenger hunt. We need to do a four square for that thing. But the new center, if you have headed south at all, the new interchange is called the High Plains Interchange. It's just a little bit south of the port of entry on I-25. And on the east side, on the southeast side of that interchange, you'll see a lot of dirt that's been piled in there. We've been working with DOT to synergize some of the costs during the construction of the interchange to actually move dirt over there into that particular facility. The land was donated, so there was no cost to the state of Wyoming for that particular land. It's just going to be the cost of construction of the building and then of the ongoing maintenance. So we're moving along. We're excited about it, and I thank all of you for your support for it.
Any other questions of Director Schober? Diane, thank you very much for your enthusiastic update on tourism. And Senator Von Slatern.
I guess you'd call it privilege of the committee.
It's certainly privilege
of the
committee.
As you know, Director Schober is one of our great cheerleaders for our state, and I'd like to congratulate her for her appointment to Corporations for Travel
Promotions.
By the Secretary of Commerce. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you very
nice
much.
Job.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Diane.
Thanks.
Also, if you would put together just a short synopsis on the federal act about the $10 fee for non-visas, I think that would be terrific and how that correlates with the efforts that you're planning on here in the supplemental budget.
I'd love to do it. Great. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much. And one last thing I just want to remind you is, you know, tourism is a successful industry because of many entities. It's the state, it's the local lodging tax efforts, and then it's the private businesses that do this. And so, you know, it's that three-layered approach to a successful industry. And thank you so much for your support of all that we do. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. And committee will be back at 9:10 to take up state parks.
Good morning. We have the State Parks and Cultural Resources with us, Agency 24, Millward Simpson, Director. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. Millward Simpson, Director of the Wyoming Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources. I'd like to quickly introduce some key members of our staff that are here this morning. To my right is Sarah Needles, and she's one of the right hands of this agency. We have two divisions in our agency, the Division of Cultural Resources and the Division of State Parks, Historic Sites, and Trails. Sarah Needles is the administrator for the Division of Cultural Resources, which includes six separate programs, the Wyoming Arts Council, the Wyoming State Archives, the Wyoming State Museum, the Office of the State Archaeologist, the Wyoming State Historic Preservation Office, and also the Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund. The other half of our agency is State Parks, Historic Sites, and Trails, and the administrator for that division is Dominic Bravo over here. His chief of operations is Bill Westerfield, and his chief of field support is Joe Bonds. And we have an administrative services division as well. It houses our human resources, our IT, our PIO office, and our accounting office. Our accounting manager is Brian Sandlin. Madam Chairman, for those of you who are not as familiar with this agency and new to this committee, I'll give you a very brief overview. It's altogether appropriate that we follow the Department of Tourism and that we are heavily related to tourism. We like to think of a lot of what we do in this agency as the tourism product. We have a lot of state-owned assets that are major features for tourism. We like to think of the vitality of the arts as an important tourism and economic development asset, all of our state historic sites, our parks, our recreation, and so forth. So we are a quality of life agency. We're the sixth largest agency in state government. We comprise about 4% of the workforce and about 1% of the general fund. We recently, hot off the press, finished a economic impact study. We did this 5 years ago, and we did an update here this last year. And it looked at our figures, our visitation, our economic impact for 2009. This is done by a fellow named Steins out of the University, I believe, of Michigan. And he's kind of the guru for the state parks industry in terms of economic impact. And his report indicated a $78.1 million annual economic impact. That is basically a return on investment of $9 per every $1 of general fund. We had almost 3 million visitors to our state parks and historic sites last year. And there's a sizable economic impact that flows from that. In terms of the budget, we have Sarah Needles up first, and we would be ready to go through the cultural resources budget unless there are questions about the agency.
Thank you, Millward. And Sarah, would you also just mention briefly the Cultural Trust Fund, because certainly there is a recommendation for funding there, and just give a little more information to the committee about that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Cultural Trust Fund, there is a recommendation in Governor Friedenthal's budget for an additional $1 million to be put into the corpus. We are at 13.9 right now, and we're realizing about $500,000 per year to give out in grants across the state. Those grants have impacted basically every portion of the state. The grants cap at $50,000, and in terms of what kinds of grants can be applied for, it's very wide open. The Cultural Trust Fund is really the only mechanism of that kind in the state for those types of grants. It spans from everything from actual bricks and mortar repairs to historic buildings to arts programs, fine and performing arts programs. So it's an additional $1 million, and I think it would help us. We're still much less than the Wildlife Trust Fund, but the additional $1 million would certainly be helpful to the people of the state.
Certainly, Senator Von Flatern.
Madam Chairman, 13.9 is the current corpus.
Madam Chairman, if I may, I would add a couple of points. This Cultural Trust Fund had been in existence since 1998, but it hadn't received any funding until, I believe, 2006. And there's tremendous demand for this very unique program. We have a ratio of about 5-1 in terms of the total dollar amount of requests to available funding off of the interest earnings of that corpus. And I also would mention that the Cultural Trust Fund Board went through a retreat process and identified cultural tourism as an extremely important focus for the trust fund. That trust fund is a mechanism that really helps get the engine revved up to really try to realize the potential that cultural tourism has for the state of Wyoming.
Director Simpson, I'm certain that you've been working on this, but that would probably be a good handout for us to have here in JAC. I had seen a recap of that this fall, but if we could have an update on the projects that were granted and possibly the revision of your mission would be important as we move forward in this.
Certainly, Madam Chairman, we'll provide that for you.
Thank you. All right. And Ms. Needles, if you would like to continue, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A couple of the first requests for my division involve the Arts Council. And I wanted to provide this committee with a little bit of background information regarding something that we have recently It's actually numbers we've recently received through it's called the Creative Vitality Index. This was a study that was paid for by our regional group, which is WestAF, Western States Arts Federation. And basically what the Creative Vitality Index measures is a set of economic inputs related to the arts and creativity in a given geographic area. And it measures two things. It takes measurements of community participation and measurements of per capita occupational employment in the arts. And I just wanted to share with you that the fact that you'll see from these numbers, Wyoming came out exceptionally high in terms of how the arts impact the economy in the state. Wyoming outperformed the Mountain West, which is Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming outperformed the other Mountain West states on a per capita basis in six of the eight categories that this study measured. And just to give you some idea of what that means, Wyoming's creative economy remains strong compared to the rest of the nation during the economic recession. Jobs within highly creative occupations continue to grow in Wyoming. These numbers, by the way, are up to 2008. We're currently conducting studies that'll get us through 2009. In 2008, nonprofits arts organizations in Wyoming earned revenues of over $26.2 million. That's 25% greater than the national average. In 2008, art galleries and art dealers in Wyoming earned over $16.9 million. That's 123% greater than the national average. And independent artists, writers, and performers in Wyoming earned over $67 million, and that is a 28% greater rate than the national average. So just to give you a sense of what the arts and creative economies mean to Wyoming, I think those numbers speak for themselves. Wyoming is doing very well. So the reason I brought that...
Go ahead. Just the cultural resources supplemental request start on page 9 of your document.
So the reason I brought that to your attention is that both of the requests that we have put forward for the Arts Council this year certainly tie in with our learning of Wyoming's status in the creative economy. And the first request is for an Art Speak conference for Wyoming artists. We just finished developing our strategic a new strategic plan. The 2005 to 2010 strategic plan, one of the things that we knew was that individual artists need more support in the state of Wyoming. And when we were out doing our town hall meetings with constituents in the state to develop our new plan, we heard loud and clear from our constituents that they really need that kind of support. And that clearly that was a priority for artists throughout the state. In order to better serve the constituent group that makes up individual artists in the state, we're requesting funding to do an Art Speak style conference. We have done these in the past to a great deal of success. And basically $10,000 of that request would go towards grants or stipends, basically to get people there, and then $15,000 for professional services, which is just the facility rental and the costs associated with putting on a conference of this sort. So the total request is $25,000.
Madam Chair, I would add in my time, as some of you may know, several years ago I was the manager of the Wyoming Arts Council. In my travels around the state, one of the things that the artist told us most clearly was they feel that they have a real problem in terms of feeling networked with the artist community because of how spread out, obviously, this state is. So convening artists together was one of the things they were most interested in doing.
And in the olden days, Millward, when I was participating on Wyoming Arts Council and those different activities, didn't we have this conference, and it was partially funded by
either WESTAF or federal funds, and I can't remember how that exactly worked, and then it had to go away because no longer did we have the funding for that project.
That's correct. The ArtSpeak Conference was what that was called, and it had been instituted for several years running, and then it was abandoned. And the visual arts community did show up at those town hall meetings and indicate that that's really kind of hurt the artist community in the state.
How has the Cultural Trust Fund grants impacted or affected kind of the coordination of networking in the state with artists and the different, you know, providers that we have going on right now?
Madam Chairman, I would say it really hasn't, because we basically, the trust fund is kind of a granting organization. So if there are requests that try to fund something, an effort like that, then if that request has merit, it gets funded. But there hasn't been an initiative on the part of the Cultural Trust Fund. It has been identified, though, in the Arts Council's long-term plan. This convening function seems to be very, very important to the arts and cultural community.
Thank you. Sarah, if you'd like to continue.
Madam Chairman, the second request that I'll cover today is our request for a biennial arts conference. Again, this is a function that the Arts Council serves, and we have done the last two biennium. We have done this kind of a conference, and we have relied largely on private sponsorship to pay for the conference, and it's a national trend, basically, that there's decreased philanthropy and decreased donations for these kinds of events. And so, basically, we're asking for money to sort of make up the difference for what we're seeing in lost income or support from the private sector. Back to that Creative Vitality Index study, that's how we definitely know that we're losing support. In 2006, contributions, gifts, and grants were $18 million overall in the nation for arts-related functions, and in 2008 it was down to $14.2 million, and Wyoming is right in there. So basically we want to carry on this tradition. I think our constituents have learned to expect this conference biennially and have really appreciated the opportunity to get all artists together. It includes oftentimes educators and other folks who sort of work in the arts at a different level. And I think it's been largely successful for them and beneficial. And so we're requesting $60,000 again. $20,000 is for stipends to get participants to the conference. And then the rest, the $40,000, is for costs associated with actually convening people and facility rental and things like that, costs associated with the conference.
Well, that completes the request for the Arts Council. The next request in cultural resources are for the archives program, and those begin on page 14.
Ms. Needles.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The first request is for some funding to expand into space in our state archives. The state archives is basically we house, for those of you that don't know, we house all of the state's records. Some of them are permanent records with historical value, and some of those records are on a retention schedule. They represent state records for government. They represent local government records, city and county government records. We are the keepers of all of those. We do have some storage facility in the Barrett Building, which is sort of located catty corner from here, the state museum's in that building. And then we have a warehouse south of town that houses the majority, the bulk of our paper records. That warehouse is actually an old liquor warehouse that was never built to house archives records, but we've sort of made do with that space. And the problem that we've encountered in the last few years is that we have completely run out of space for paper records. If you go into that space, you'll see that there are shelves that are 14 stacks high with boxes, you know, the banker-style boxes full of paper records. And currently what we're having to do is when paper records come in, we have to stack the boxes on wooden pallets in the center of the hallways in that space because we were completely out of space. In order to try and solve this problem, we asked A&I, who also had space in that same building, if we could expand into some of their space. And they accommodated that request. They removed some of the items that were, I think there were cleaning supplies and things like that in that space. They've moved those out and done a little bit of redesign, moved a wall, temporary wall for us so that we could move into that space. In order to make use of that new space, we need shelving. And that is part of this request. You'll see there's $100,000 requested for that shelving. There's an additional $5,000 requested for a lift. We have a lift in that building, and it is so old that, frankly, it's barely working right now. And if you walk in there, you'll see that these shelves go all the way to the ceiling. There's no way these boxes can be stored, moved, or anything can be retrieved from them without a lift. And then the last figure there, $45,000, is actually to get help in moving the boxes and reorganizing that space. And that doesn't ask for employees. We are planning on using contract labor to move all of this. And it doesn't just mean, you know, a couple of guys wearing belts, picking up boxes and moving them. It really is a big project in terms of reorganization. Because it's so systematic how you store archives, you can't just, you know, stick the boxes on the floor into the new shelving. We really have to shift a lot of boxes in order to keep this together.
Ms. Needles, the governor denied that portion of the contract employees. Can you tell me where he thought there was sufficient manpower?
Madam Chairman, the way I will address that is to tell you what I have in terms of manpower. The State Archives has 17 employees, most of whom are in the Barrett Building in our records room doing research or filming microfilm or scanning. And I actually have 3 employees out at the warehouse. I can tell you that none of these people are physically probably fit to move tens of thousands of boxes. And if we don't get help to do it, it'll just take, you know, 10 years for us to be able to move into the new space without the additional help. So I know that the governor's recommendation said that we have sufficient staff, but that's what my archive staff looks like right now.
Senator Hastert.
Madam Chairman, a follow-up on that point is, did you have an estimate of the amount of time and manpower for that project?
Ms. Needles.
Madam Chairman and Senator Hastert, the numbers are based loosely on what you would pay a contract labor person to do work like this. We just kind of had to take our best guess as to what the market's paying right now. And I guess I would just point out that whatever is not used would certainly go back into the general fund. It would revert. So this is 2 bodies hired full-time for a year.
Madam Chairman, I was trying to get an understanding of the magnitude of the job, and because Madam Chairman, I just, you know, wanted to see if we're talking, and I think you've kind of articulated some of that, just if we're moving a few boxes or a few shelves, or, you know, just if you can, is there a way to give us an idea, like the size of the room and the number of boxes? Are you literally saying tens of thousands of boxes, and
yes,
that's literal? Okay, that helps.
Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, I'm assuming that they're going to take the boxes off the shelf, put them on a pallet, move them someplace else, and take the boxes back off the pallet and put them on shelves. Is that correct?
Sure.
Madam Chairman, that's true. And it's a matter of, you know, in order to keep the system in line, they'll have to remove items, boxes from, you know, that are currently shelved from those shelves and move them down, and then take the boxes that are on pallets and put them in their appropriate location. Currently, the process that happens when someone calls the State Archives, which is an everyday occurrence, and asks for records to be retrieved, the staff out there have to basically go in and find where it's stored and retrieve the paper object and either copy it or scan it in and send it to the person requesting the information. Obviously, having boxes stacked on pallets makes that very inefficient. And while this, you know, if we get the shelving, while this is all taking place, that requests for retrieval of information is not going to stop. So the staff that are currently out there will have to keep doing their full-time job of retrieving those objects in addition to moving boxes if we don't get help to do that.
And a chairman,
follow-up, Senator Meyer.
I guess I know they have to continue doing it. I guess I'm just curious as to how busy the three people are actually out there. Are they continually, 8 hours out of the day doing that? If they were going to do both jobs, would they be able to do one job maybe for 4 hours a day and actually 4 hours a day they're actually retrieving the records? Because you can't put more than two people, on a project as far as putting boxes on a pallet. And as far as, I guess putting boxes on a pallet, I know that we could load a 1,000-box truck of potatoes in about 45 minutes with three people. Of course, they're not actually sorting. I think you have to do some sorting as you do the go from one side to the other side. So I would think that maybe this would probably take you 2 years rather than 1 year to do if you didn't have the extra people. And if that's a correct assumption, I guess you could indicate so. And if that is a correct assumption, it's going to actually take you 2 years rather than 1 year. What is the ramifications of that?
Ms. Needles?
Madam Chairman, to answer the first part of the question first, do these people work full-time doing what they do out there? Absolutely. In fact, up until 2 years ago, I had four staff out at that building. And one of those positions was used in another place in the agency because we had another need, and one of the other positions is gone because it's part of the freeze. So they're shorthanded as is. And are working with two people permanently in that space and one that runs around to the state offices and delivers paper boxes, picks up boxes for other state agencies and local governments throughout the state, while the other two are in that space retrieving and storing and organizing the objects. To answer the second part of the question, yeah, it's not just about moving boxes physically. It's about reorganizing the boxes as well. And so part of what these folks would be doing would be, with oversight from the staff that are out there and knowledgeable about the system, would be getting things back in order. Obviously, when you've got years of boxes being stacked on pallets, things are not in the order they should be in. And so it's a bigger job than just physically moving the boxes. So I think if we don't get extra help to move these, I think we're looking, at 5 years at a minimum to be able to utilize the shelving in that other space, to utilize it fully.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And as far as part of reorganizing is, just for my edification, is there a way to, is everything that's in there, necessary to keep there? And is there a way of, looking at it, is there some things that can be weeded out, and would that be part of this process?
Ms. Needles?
Madam Chairman, most of what is stored there, most everything that's stored there is either, one, required to be kept by statute, or is historically significant and needs to be kept because of its historical value to the state of Wyoming. It's the only repository for those kinds of records in the state.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm familiar with corporate retention and archival policies, but it seems to me that this is sort of because these are historical documents and things that are required by statute, that I'm wondering if they're – I'm new to the committee. I don't understand your process very well. Can you kind of take me through what materials are selected? How – are they required to be kept forever, or is there a time when they can be taken off, and is there a process – it sounds like, for microfilming things, and is there a better way to do that with secure electronic storage that might be more accessible than having people try to find the box in the back corner and dig through it to find the piece of paper that you're looking for?
Madam Chairman, I'm happy to answer all those questions because they're all forefront on our minds right now. We've really been focusing on archives and looking at the process to see if there's a better way to do some of the things that we're doing. In terms of why and how we keep things or the reasons why we keep things permanently versus on a temporary schedule, that is all decided and set partially by statute and partially by a state records committee that is established by statute. This committee looks at things that are coming in for retention either permanently or temporarily. And my staff, the records management staff in the archives, work with local and state government entities to set those retention schedules. So we don't do it in isolation. We certainly do it with who the end users basically are of those records and set retention schedules. When the retention time is up, there's a destruction process that happens. Now, certain kinds of records the State Records Committee looks at and decides that they are valuable historically and should be kept permanently. In terms of, is there a better process? Yes, right now we do microfilm just about everything that is a permanent record because microfilm is a permanent way. It is shown to last. It has longevity, and it's not subject to changes in software and things like that we see with electronic records where you might be using Word today that in 5 years is not the same system or same program, same software, and you can't retrieve that information electronically because that software doesn't exist anymore. And so yes, most permanent records, all permanent records are basically kept in microfilm right now. And one thing that we're working on, it's another bill that's circulating right now, is on doing a storage study, and it has a $200,000 appropriation attached to it. Basically, this study is for us to figure out, is there a better, more effective, more efficient way to store the records? We know certain kinds of records, we will always have to keep the paper record, but there are other kinds of records that probably can be and should be stored electronically. If it has a 5 to 7 year retention schedule, that's probably something that we could feel fairly comfortable storing that electronically, and it would save us probably a lot of time and money. It'd certainly be a more efficient way for the end user to retrieve the data if they could just log on to the internet, use a password, and get to their information rather than calling us and having us go out and look for it in a box. So yes, we're trying to get there. We're not there yet. Frankly, Wyoming's a little bit behind. We're seeing things, proposals that, from other state agencies, in fact, that are saying we want to have our records created electronically. So those are born digitally. And we don't have an effective way to save those right now. We don't have server space to handle something like that. And we don't have anyone that is managing, is capable and able and to manage that kind of data. So, yes, we are trying to get at that. This all came about as an interim study with the Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources Committee. And this specific request was part of that study. It was requested that we put this into our budget.
Follow up.
In the $200,000 bill that's circulating, does that address the need for records retention and archiving of digitally born documents?
Ms. Needles?
Madam Chairman, yes, that does. That's a big piece of what we're trying to get at with that is to try and get some help from outside vendors that have experience handling electronic records and basically look at our process and our workflow and help us get a grip on what we need to do so that we have a solid plan moving forward and we're not sort of wasting time and money and effort trying to figure out how to do it ourselves. Frankly, I don't have – my staff is very competent in what they do, but they are not electronic records people, and we need a little bit of help to figure that out.
And Ms. Needles, I think that probably takes care of the discussion on the microfilm that was denied by the governor, just what we've done right now. Does that help you, or would you like to add further to that?
The microfilm processor.
Madam Chairman, you're referring to the next budget request?
Right, on page 15 at the bottom.
Madam Chairman, I would just add a couple of points on that.
Sure.
Just that we are and probably will continue to microfilm permanent records simply because it's a more solid and long-lasting way of retaining records than electronic. And so the issue that we're facing is that those microfilm processors are very old and they need work. And we haven't had money in our budget really to flex and fix those things. And so we're asking for some of that. And I mentioned that we have a person that drives around with records, picks up boxes of records from agencies and delivers them to the archives and then back. We are also asking for a cargo van to save. It's basically in the long run, it's a cost savings to have a larger vehicle than what we have right now. We're going to be taking less trips, essentially, with a cargo van. So that's why that request is in there.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. How many trips a week would you be taking with the cargo van? And the reason I ask that, I'm just thinking that maybe we should have a cargo van in the motor pool rather than a small van, and that might actually work for other agencies that need that type of requirement.
Madam Chairman, currently what we do is check out a van from motor pool. And while they do have cargo vans, they're not always available. And so a lot of times what happens is we do get stuck with a smaller van, so then we have to do multiple trips during the course of a week instead of, you know, something we could accomplish in one day.
You have a follow-up? Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, I recall some other testimony, I think, earlier on the micro film processor is, and what I recall was that some of these processors, it's hard to get the parts in the first place, and some of them may be obsolete. I'm wondering, does anybody make new microfilm processors, or is this something that is just antiquated and we really have some circumstances where we're going to have to make some changes?
Madam Chairman and Senator Meyer, what I'm told by my archive staff is that these parts are very difficult to come by. And the issue that we're sort of dealing with is the microfilm is the national standard by which archives use. That is the accepted retention of records, the accepted form. And so while we're seeing a decline in that, I'm sure largely due to electronic records taking over, when you've got permanent records, it's the only thing we have right now. And until we get a better process or a better system in place that we can rely on, that we know that data is going to be retrievable, we will continue to use these processors and to microfilm so that we're not risking losing any of this information.
I'm inclined to at least approve the microfilm processing part of the budget, but I'd like to have a little bit more support as far as why we should be doing that. As far as, is this the only microfilm processor that we have? Do we have any backups? What happens if this, kind of give me an idea of your capacity and what happens if this processor goes down in the parts and we haven't done this work.
Senator Meyer, thank you. I think that's very important. And also, Ms. Needles, if you would put with that our statute, which dictates that it is microfilm. And if some of you members remember, we have tried in the some folks have tried in the past to change that medium, but this is, by law, the process that we need to do to keep our records in an archival state. What I want to do is we're going to wrap up with cultural resources, and then I'm going to ask Parks and Cultural Resources, Sarah, if you don't need to come back, that's okay, because I know your time is valuable. But Parks is important to this committee, and we have several new members, and I would, if that would be okay with you, Director Simpson, have you come back at 12:30. I have another meeting that starts upon adjournment, but I will cut that short and get in here so we can hear Parks and then continue with the rest of our schedule to try to stay on time. I'll take from you, Director Simpson, then Senator Von Flatern, and then we'll break for session.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That would be fine. Just before we leave the Pacific Building Expansion request, that wanted just to emphasize that this is a very high priority for me as director, juggling the priorities, budget requests between the two divisions. This was number three, and I do consider it to be of an emergency nature. And if you do have an opportunity, we offered to take the TRW folks out to the Pacific Building so you can kind of see this for yourself. What's going on there. It was very helpful for the members of the TRW that went out to kind of actually visualize what it is we're talking about. But this is a serious issue in terms of having run out of space in that building, in terms of especially our statutory responsibilities with those records. Thank you.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like some numbers on the use of the van. I assume the motor pool and would have checkouts and how many times you use it and how many trips they took. I hope that's not too complicated to come up with, but it sure would help us analyze whether you need that bigger vehicle.
All right. And Senator Meyer?
Maybe when A&I comes here, we can have a discussion about the motor pool and the cargo van usage also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's remember that.
Madam Chairman, just for your information,
Mr. Cox?
A&I does have it's over $1 million request in there to buy additional vehicles. I'm sure you could specify that one of them be a cargo van.
With all the right marketing on the outside of it, one of those new skins that says State Archives? Okay. That would work, wouldn't it? Okay. Ms. Needles, why don't we give you the last word for your division before we break?
I just want to thank the committee for taking time today. And, again, I would stress that the archives, I think, has been woefully ignored in the last at least 10 years. And part of my rationale for why I brought these is that I decided that they had been ignored for so long and were really kind of stumbling along. They're doing a great job with what they have, but they're really they really need some help. And so that's why I brought these items. So I appreciate your careful consideration of the archives in particular.
Good. Ms. Needles, I think what's important, too, is you might just do a brief update on what some of the other states are doing nationally in advancing on archiving. That, I mean, nothing in depth, but it could really help the committee. We have, at the state level, we certainly have some brochures available that we could provide, and possibly that would be another good thing to do with archives is to try to develop a tour for the committee as we're moving forward on these issues. All right, committee, we're adjourned until 12:30. Thank you very much, and thank you, State Parks and Cultural Resources.